NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Well, it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome back to Short Hops and Tall Tales, a pitcherless podcast highlighting the funny, bizarre, and weird elements of baseball that make America's pastime special. I'm Noah Scott, and I am once again thrilled to... I'm thrilled to introduce my Blatherskite co-host, Brandon Riddle, to the show.
Blatherskite co-host it is. Glad to be here, Noah.
Where do you find these words?
So Blatherskite, I forget where I found it, but it's just someone who talks nonsense for a while, which makes a lot of sense, actually.
Okay.
That makes sense. I'm in.
That is a fun word.
Blatherskite. It feels almost German, like you can yell it.
I thought it was like, you know, gave me some German energy there. Blatherskite.
Blatherskite.
Or like you know, like Norwegian or something.
Like, oh, I can see that, yeah.
A Nordic country.
Yeah, and it's like some kind of fish.
Cool.
Anyway. What we got going on today, Noah?
I genuinely could not tell you because this is the first time I'm reading the rundown you put this one together. So it looks like we're talking about somebody named Hector Espino.
Espino.
The Rebel of Chihuahua, which sounds wildly entertaining. And then we are playing a game. We're bringing back the Rent, Extend, Cut game this time, playing with some center fielders. So I'm excited for that. I don't know who we're talking about yet, so that'll be fun.
And that's actually going to lead us to something else you may not know, pickoff trivia.
All right.
So this one, it might be a little short. Who was the first pitcher to officially throw a pitch 100 miles an hour?
I got to be honest, I feel really good about saying Walter Johnson.
Ooh, Walter Johnson. How do you think they, was that like with the motorcycle method where they ran against the motorcycle?
Okay. I was thinking the motorcycle.
Okay, well, officially the first player to pitch over 100.
Can I give a second guess though? Because I feel like
I can give you a decade.
My second guess. Well, I for me, I think it's between two players.
Okay.
If it's not Walter Johnson, it's got to be Bob Feller, right?
Ooh, Bob Feller's another good one. Yeah.
So I'm wrong on both.
Okay. Okay, well, it really just depends how you say official with all these. Yeah, I guess with the modern radar gun, let's go with that. The radar gun. 1974. Nolan Ryan,
that was the third. Okay.
100.8 miles an hour.
And that was when, now you say it with a modern radar gun. I remember watching the fastball documentary. Was that when he was throwing it through like the copper coils at home plate?
So this was during a game. This wasn't during that test. I do remember that. That was really cool to see throwing it straight through this copper coils to get that velocity. But this was during a game. So maybe I should have rephrased it that way.
I feel like just like while we're on the subject, it might be a fun opportunity to tell just a very brief story about those, you know, trying to get velocity readings for those.
Oh, yeah.
Features. So when Brandon briefly mentioned a motorcycle. So there used to, you know, there was this big Hall of Fame pitcher. His name's Walter Johnson.
The Big Train.
They called him the Big Train, which is one of the coolest nicknames, I think, out there. But this guy, he threw so hard. And of course, at the time when he played, I don't remember, what was he, 30s, 20s, 20s, 30s?
Walter Johnson, 30s, 20s. Yeah.
Around that time where obviously they didn't have radar guns like they do today, very precise readings, but everyone knew he threw hard. And of course, being humans, naturally inquisitive, they wanted to know just how hard he threw. So what they ended up doing was did he throw it at like a wall or did someone catch him?
I think someone caught it, if I remember correctly.
But they had him line up, right? Traditional mound distance, right? And throw as hard as he could at this catcher or target. And they actually ran a motorcycle going like alongside him, I think at like 100 miles an hour, right? And the motorcycle, it had like lead up time to get to that velocity, and they got there at the same time. And it's like, when you think of like just the scientific method, that sounds absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, that's what we got. Well, I'll tell you what. I got this guy with a motorcycle. Let's see how fast we can go.
You're going to drag race a motorcycle, and if you beat him there, you throw 100 miles an hour. That's how it works, and it's science.
Yeah, anyway. You can't say it. You can't prove it wrong. Yeah, so that was the motorcycles. And you had mentioned that they brought for Nolan Ryan, I believe it was, or Bob Feller, like a military radar out where he had to throw a ball right in a small box.
Yeah.
And do you remember what was all in that contraption?
I
remember like there were some metal strings that were holding
it
down.
It was like metal or copper strings that were like suspended and like, you know, unraveled down. And I think it was two sets, right?
Yeah.
He hit the first set, and then it went through and hit the second set, and somehow they
could figure out the velocity from that. And of course, the issue with that is that you're not getting the velocity from when it leaves his hand. Exactly. You're getting it after it's already traveled 60 feet, so it's slowed down a bit by then. But yeah, so a little interesting trivia there.
Yeah, go watch Fastball. It's a documentary.
It's really good.
Really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And that is going to lead us to our main segment today. Hector Espino, the Rebel of Chihuahua.
All right.
And I didn't know anything about this guy. I feel kind of guilty about that because he is the all-time Mexican League leader in home runs and the all-time minor league leader in home runs.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just don't feel bad because I haven't heard of him either.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll get more into it. But the league he was in Mexico was still kind of considered a minor league. So when he was hitting the home runs, they still counted towards the total, which is kind of neat. Got double dipped there a little bit.
Okay.
But Hector is a fascinating individual. And I'll say, you know, at first, he's kind of difficult to figure out as well, especially from a Major League Baseball perspective. Because when you think about it, baseball in this country and almost every professional sport in America believes and behaves as though they are the absolute pinnacle of the sports, right?
Of course.
Like MLB, NBA, and the NHL, I think, okay, we are the best in the world. And that perspective then rubs off on those fans. And fans assume that players always want to strive for the pinnacle of the profession.
Right.
But that ain't it. Okay. So for like 100 different valid reasons, a generational player can stay in the home league and still be legendary. They don't need Major League Baseball stamp of approval. And that's exactly what happened with Hector Espino. So Hector's story starts, you know, late 50s, early 60s, but we're going to start in 1964. This is his third season of professional baseball, and he's already proven himself to be a star in Mexico. First two seasons hit .362 and followed that up with .465.
So is he playing in America right now, or is he in Mexico?
We're gonna get there. So the first two seasons there, we're in Mexico. And then the Jacksonville Suns, a minor league team for the Cardinals, they brought Espino up north for a season. So this is his first season in America. And he had a bit of a slow start. But he got himself hitting an even 300 after 32 games. So first season in America, hitting 300, perfect. He went back to Mexico. Okay. And there were a bunch of different reasons purported in newspapers. Some say he was just homesick. Some say it was good old U.S. racism he didn't like. Others said it was he liked being a big fish in a small pond in Mexico, being the great right. player he was. But his wife said that they had a fine time in Jacksonville and that Espino just wanted to play in Mexico. And there's kind of an odd story when he was playing up there. He was running to catch a fly ball, and his hat flew off as he was running. So he stopped, he scooped up his hat, and then the ball landed for a hit.
Ow, man.
Just a really odd moment there that happens. I think he was just like so, that. Yeah. Like reading about him in that moment, it just felt like he was so content within himself that he thought, I need my hat.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look good. You got to look good because then you're going to play good. That's rule number one.
Look good, you play good. You feel good, you play good. Absolutely. But in reality, why he returned to Mexico is probably a bit about everything we did mention as well, but it's mostly about the pay. So Jacksonville sold Espino to the St. Louis Cardinals after the season, and Espino wanted to take a share of the profits from the sale that, you know, they sold him. So he thought, I deserve some of that money.
Right, of course.
Yeah, but they never gave him a signing bonus for doing that. So instead of flying to Tampa Bay, to report with the Cardinals, he just took a flight home back to Chihuahua.
So did they promised him a signing bonus and they didn't deliver, right?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I'd be upset as well.
Yeah. So Jacksonville, they actually sold Espino, and they were going to use some of the funds to build more of a stadium, to improve the stadium. And Espino's like, hey, I just want some of that money that you got because of me.
Yeah.
It just didn't work. Yeah.
You got because of my labor. I put my body on the line. I want to get paid.
Absolutely. Yeah,
this is exactly what we're talking about right now.
Right. Yeah. So he thought, well, I have a league back home. I'm just going to go do that.
Right.
And there was also another aspect in Mexican baseball at the time. So newspapers around then referred to the players as property, literally property. That's what they labeled them as, something to be owned. And Espino absolutely hated it.
Right.
So when baseball in America, you know, just dropped any semblance of respect, it kind of came in flashbacks and Espino just didn't need it.
So you're saying that that's how the Mexican papers referred to
in the 60s. Yeah, it was property. That was the phrase used.
That's something that, and I don't want to be too much of a downer with this lockout, but that's something that we still do. Papers and especially like front offices, they refer to players as assets and as liabilities. And
we still call the people that have the teams owners.
They call them owners, and they talk about how this guy's like a good value. It's like, no, that's a person. Mm-hmm. All right. Like that's, you know, he's an athlete, but he's a person, right? Like it's very intentionally dehumanizing.
And sadly, it is easy to slip into that, especially, you know, fantasy baseball players, people that just kind of watch the game. Their stats not really attributed to your personality.
Yeah.
So when you see things like when players, you know, playing pranks on each other or actually understanding how they have a home life, he humanizes them and it actually makes for a much funner game as well.
Yeah, I mean, it all just comes back to, you know, the way we use language is important, and it's important to be mindful of it, especially when you're talking about other human beings, that they don't exist for your entertainment. Like, yes, that's a part of their job, but they're people, and they're just trying to survive like anyone else.
Yeah, so just like Espino, he didn't want to be treated as property, so he just left.
Right.
And that wasn't his last try in America, however, because 3 years later, he gave the California Angels a shot. So the Angels came knocking, and he thought, you know, it's pretty close to the border. I can still go home and enjoy myself.
Yeah.
But before spring training even started, the Angels manager declared he didn't want any of his players crossing the border during spring training.
That seems weird and also targeted.
Yes, it very much so was. And Espino thought, fine, I'm just going to stay on my side of the border. And he didn't show up.
That's pretty clever.
It's like, he's having a good time, Mex. So I don't need the I don't need this California job.
Yeah.
And it also came back again to pay. The Angels were not paying him as much as he thought he was worth. In fact, he was getting paid more in Mexico than he would have been with the Angels.
Yeah.
So why deal with less pay and the racism if you can just have a good time? in Mexico.
Yeah.
And in fact, the first season back in Mexico after that happened, he beat out Minnie Mendoza for the batting title by 21 points. That's how you know that he wasn't just, you know, a regular player. He beat out Hall of Famer Minnie Mendoza.
Minnie Mendoza, who played for two decades. Mendoza. Like, he's a huge Hall of Fame name for mm-hmm. those of you that aren't super familiar with him. So, like, that's a huge credit to, or a huge point to Espino's bona fides, really, as a ball player. That's really incredible.
By 21 points, too. That's impressive.
Yeah.
So, overall, Espino would be courted by a whole bunch of MLB teams. The Yankees, we talked about Cardinals and Angels, Cleveland and Houston. They all kind of wanted him to come up, but no. Yeah. Because in Mexico, he was a bona fide star. My goodness. So in his rookie season, we talked about that. He hit 362 with 20 home runs. He led the Monterey Sultans to a championship and was named Rookie of the Year. So right off the bat, literally, we're having a great career down there.
Yeah, seriously.
And then he had an injury-shortened sophomore campaign. He only hit 358 with 23 home runs in just 99 games, mind you. And the year he got back from Jacksonville, he got his first batting title in Mexico, finishing with a 371 average and, again, 46 home runs.
That is ridiculous. Those are just unreal stats.
Video game numbers, as we said a couple episodes ago.
It cracks almost 50 home runs. All right, Barry Bonds, I see you.
And, in fact, that year in 64, he led the league with 117 runs, and only two other players in Mexican League history scored more, including Cool Papa Bell. Okay. Always got to get a Cool Papa Bell reference in an episode.
Now, were they playing in the Mexican League at the same time? No, right?
No, so Cool Papa Bell was in the 30s. Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, I thought he was much before. Yeah, okay, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, and we had mentioned that he is the all-time home run leader in Mexico, and we'll get to those numbers in a moment here. But he wasn't necessarily a big home run hitter. He was more like Hank Aaron in that regard. We just hit so well that it's inevitable that some balls are going to find a way over the wall.
Right.
So here's a quick list of averages, just to kind of throw it at you, that he hit for seasons. 379, 365, 356, 377, 337, 369, 362, and 465.
Wow.
He almost My goodness.
Hit 500.
Almost hit nice. 500.
Those are all nuts numbers, right? Like, just for a quick like palate cleanser, like, you know, great average is 300. Like, that's an all-star,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you got a little bit of power. 365 or anything above 330, really, today, like, you're leading the league.
That's Coors Field numbers. Yeah.
And the lowest average you just named was 337. Everything else is 350 and above. And then he hit 465. Now, was that chronological?
Not chronological, no.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah, later on as he aged, he hit 297 once. So he was getting up there at that point. But still, you know, he could just hit.
And 297 is awesome.
Yeah.
that's great. That's awesome.
Let's see here. So now that's the averages. Home run-wise, he was consistent. So overall, he hit 310 home runs in winter ball, 453 home runs in summer, so the regular season, and of course, 3 home runs in Jacksonville. And that winds up with a total of 766 total home runs.
Wow. That is really cool. You know who he reminds me of? We've talked about him on the podcast. He reminds me of Sadaharu Oh.
Yep.
That's who he reminds me of, like Mexico's version of Sadaharu Oh. Like, that is so cool. And like, I love that he stayed in Mexico because he had, you know, he had his principles and he was practical. Like, there's no reason for him to play in America when he's going to get treated horribly and he's not going to get paid appropriately and he's not celebrated like he should be.
And that was very much his personality. Everyone, you know, refers to him as just a quiet guy that mostly kept to himself, you know, just being honest, respectful, and just really strong. His family said that his favorite hobby was grilling. So he's just like the Hank Hill of Mexican baseball.
Hank Hill. I'll tell you what, I'm going to hit this ball out to
tell you what.
Oh, wow. That's great. I want to hang out with this guy.
Oh, yeah. And so there was a little story as well when he was in the 1 year, I forget exactly what team he was on. But the team was running promotion where any player that hit the home run got a ticket for free suits. And he has a good relationship with everyone because he's a good guy like that. Yeah. And so Jose, the bus driver, turned to Espino and said, "Are you going to win me a free suit tonight?" And Espino said, "Sure, Jose, I'll win you a suit." And then when Jose looked away, Espino held up two fingers and whispered, "Two suits." And and he won him two suits by hitting two home runs.
That, okay, it's the numbers are one thing, but a true legend has a story like that. It is like too absurd to be true, but it is like that's so great. I love those small little nuggets.
Yeah, and he's just a revered figure in Mexican League Baseball, obviously. People talk about him like we would talk about any legendary figure in baseball. He's just up there with the esteem and just the way he carried himself, the great ambassador.
Yeah, like that is a really like start to finish. Like I, from very genuinely not knowing, I had never heard this guy's name before, but like the whole story is just so like he stuck to his principles.
Yeah, love that.
Snot out of the baseball, and you know he did what he loved. That's so cool, you know, because it's not often that you see somebody who really like, you know, is the full package, just like, like off and on the field like that. So that is really cool. Question.
Yeah.
In the header, you call him the Rebel of Chihuahua. I know Chihuahua's a town. Is that
right?
Is there anything more to that nickname?
Right. So the story there, it goes back again to a labor dispute with pay with the team of Chihuahua, I think it was. And the team wasn't paying him enough at all. And so he decided, I'm just going to sit out and not play until I get paid what I'm worth. Right. And so the fans started calling him the Rebel of Chihuahua because he kept sticking it to the man.
He's really kind of like Sadaharu Oh and Kurt Flood kind of like mixed into one a little bit.
Yeah, and when he stepped away from St. Louis, this was still 5 years before Kurt Flood.
Right, yeah.
So it still wasn't normal for players to say, no, I'm not getting paid enough, I'm just not going to play.
And I love that line about how his Angels manager, he's like, I don't want any of my players crossing the border. He's like, all right, I'll just stay on my side in Mexico. Like, it's a horrible situation to put your players
in. It is.
But like Espino's response, you know, he's like, all right, I won't cross
the border. Yeah, I just won't. And it was definitely an issue of racism because some of the newspapers had headlines that were, oh boy, like you can't mistake that.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I'm truly shocked that baseball was racist.
Right. So some other really cool things about Espino here. So he was intentionally walked with the bases loaded during a playoff game.
Wow.
Absolutely. Overall, 13 batting titles, 6 home run titles, 6 MVP awards, is in the Mexican Baseball Hall of Fame, is in the Caribbean Baseball Hall of Fame, and again, recognizes the all-time minor league home run king with 484 minor league home runs.
Now that would be like that's incredible. But I just this is kind of kicking off an idea in my head. Like it would be really cool to have an international baseball Hall of Fame because we have so many issues, of course, with the American version.
And I would love for Cooperstown to be the baseball Hall of Fame.
Like period, right? Like
yeah,
because you got to recognize Hector Espino. You got to recognize guys like Sadaharu Oh. Even Tuffy Rhodes, right? Like,
absolutely.
You gotta recognize these players because baseball, while you know MLB is the like, you know, it's you know considered the stage,
the pinnacle. Yes,
right. It's baseball's an international sport.
Yeah, it's
right?
Just a small sliver of what's out there, and we're missing great stories.
Yeah, I had never heard of Hector Espino
until
20 minutes ago.
And I have to, unfortunately, I guess, thank the lockout because I thought I don't want to tell stories about Major League Baseball right now. Right. And baseball exists everywhere. So let's tell those stories. So I think that's what I'm going to do for a little bit on this podcast.
I think that's a great idea. Very, very cool. Any closing words about the Rebel of Chihuahua?
Oh, man. He was, of course, if somebody has home run titles like this, another nickname is the Mexican Babe Ruth.
I feel like everyone's some iteration of Babe Ruth.
Yep.
At this point.
And that's why I didn't put that one in the title. Like, we don't, come on, everyone has that.
Yeah.
It's just an easy nickname to get.
I think that your comparison to Henry Aaron's a little more apt in the sense that he was just consistently hitting the ball well, and it translated to home runs. Hector Espino, the Rebel of Chihuahua, altogether fantastic story. Thank you, Hector. We'll be back with a game right after a word from our sponsors.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we are
hitting the ground running today.
A very refreshing drink later. We are back with a game called Rent Extend Cut. For those of you who haven't been here while we've played this game, it's a fun little brain teaser, because we like to torture ourselves on this show, where we take three roughly similar players from throughout baseball history, and then we compare them and we decide, if we're the general manager, which one are we renting for just, you know, one season? Which one extending and building a statue of, you know, keeping for life? And then which one are we cutting from the roster entirely?
We make a lot of people angry with this.
We make a lot of people angry, and I'm sure that they're already shaking their fists. It might be at traffic on the way home, but it's probably at us. And now I said at the top of the show, I didn't know which players we had selected for this, but I see we've got the Duke of Flatbush, Duke Snyder, as one of them. I'm very excited. I think I've already got my pick lined up.
But that's just one guy. Who are the other guys?
Okay, so let me scroll down a little bit. Duke Snyder. Oh, Andrew Jones. Andrew Jones, interesting. And Jim Edmonds. Okay, these are all...
Yeah, we're going to have a tough time with this one.
I didn't realize they were so close together.
Yeah, they were all extremely similar. So for you listening at home, to get a top-line idea, let's just use WAR, for example, over the course of their career. So Duke Snyder has a career WAR of 65.9. Andrew Jones, 62.7. Jim Edmonds, 60.4. So they're all right within striking distance of each other.
And I think an important note, if this is the first time that you're listening to this, we don't do this based on pure stats. We do this based on a combination of that and heart, you know, because that's what baseball's about. It's having, you know, it's really the holistic view of the player. Wow. And we've got some good names.
My heart tells me one thing already.
Okay, what's your initial?
My heart is on building the statue of Andrew Jones, because my goodness, I loved watching him play. And you can go look up highlights, and the highlights of this man, you see the ball hit in center field and you go, that's not possible. But he closes the gap and dives for that ball so well. I mean, there's a reason why he's a 10-time Golden Glover.
We have very different memories of Andrew Jones.
I gotta see a young Andrew Jones at his peak. I remember watching him then.
Yeah.
Of course, the argument goes he had a great first half and terrible second half. The argument goes, if you flip his career around to where it's, you know, mediocre in the beginning and fantastic to end, he'd be a shoo-in for Hall of Fame. But it's that weird dichotomy in the bifurcation, if you will, of his career.
Okay. And that's the thing about. I feel like him and Edmonds are very close together here. This is going to be interesting, because Duke Snyder is, he's got more wins above replacement, right? The single counting stat.
He also has considerably more time in the league than like Jim Edmonds, for example.
Yeah. Let's compare that first. How long did each player play?
Let's see. I don't have the years, but I do have the at bats, which gives you a pretty good indicator. So Duke Snider had 7,100 at-bats, Jim Edmonds 6,800. So, you know, maybe half a season more.
Okay. Now, the thing about Edmonds and Andruw Jones that really sticks out to me is because they're considered two of the best defensive outfielders of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I unfortunately don't have super great memories of either, because at the early 2000s, I was in kindergarten in 2004.
I'll tell you what, after this podcast, I got the links next to the names. Go just look at some of those highlights, and it's phenomenal.
I've seen the highlights for sure, but what I'm saying is I don't have that like personal,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I wasn't growing up when Andruw Jones was tracking stuff down in Atlanta. I do remember Jim Edmonds in Anaheim. California, right?
It is easy to kind of lose that perspective, because like when you say Duke Snider, of course I know the name, I know the Hall of Famer, but I don't have those visceral memories of him laying out and just being an amazing player. I just know, Hall of Famer.
So the converse of the Andruw Jones conversation that we were having was I did say I remember Andruw Jones. I remember him for the wrong reasons, because So Andruw Jones played, he came up in 1996 and he played with with Atlanta for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
There. And that's where he was, you know, a borderline Hall of Fame talent. He hit 30 plus home runs for like four straight seasons. You know,
Gold Glove defense center field. That is a Hall of Famer right there.
Platinum Glove defense. But then he comes, you know, so 2008, he's only 31.
Yeah.
He came to the Dodgers and put up the worst season I've ever seen in my entire life. He had a 38 wins WRC plus, a 38.
Yeah, that's not ideal. And he lost a couple of steps as well, if I remember correctly.
38. Why do I keep making myself do math live on air? 38. That's what
that's less than
47%. That's wow. That's like what, 62% worse than the.
Yeah, it's not great. We didn't have a good time there.
That's terrible. Like he hit 158 with the Dodgers in 75 games.
Yeah, but I mean those first 11 seasons though, phenomenal.
Well, I just remember I've had this argument about Andruw Jones, whether he's a Hall of Famer or not, enough to where I kind of, you know, I feel fine like kind of commenting on his career, because he just kind of like, I'm never going to say an athlete gave up, but I feel like he lost that drive a little bit, because he also got old. That's part of it.
Yeah.
He got old, and his fall off just happened so rapidly.
It did happen real fast.
And it was like, as soon as he turned 30, like even in Atlanta that last season, like he was a below average hitter, still, you know, usable, but he wasn't in the Grand Canyon just yet. But yeah, so it's kind of hard for me to kind of rationalize that alongside the very great years from Andruw Jones. So I feel like that might end up being the differentiator here, because when you're talking about one Hall of Famer and, you know, a couple guys that are borderline, I feel like that is really, you got to draw the line in the sand somewhere. So that kind of just immediately puts me, okay, I'll put Andruw Jones to the side for now. I'll come back. Jim Edmonds, right up there with Andruw Jones in terms of defense. He was incredible. The one highlight I think everyone remembers is that diving catch into the wall. Like, he's diving. So for those of you who haven't seen this, go on YouTube and just type in Jim Edmonds. It's the first thing that pops up. I guarantee it. But I'll run down the place. This guy hits a ball. He's on the Angels. He's playing center field. Guy hits a ball over his head. He's running full tilt, lays out, like dives backwards in the sense that like he dives away from home plate, right? He's diving towards the wall,
mm-hmm.
lays out and like basket catches this baseball in the most it's gotta be a top five catch in MLB history. Like, it's up there with the Willie Mays play. I'd probably say, I don't know. What do you think about that? Is that a hot take? It might be a little hot.
Maybe it's a little hot, but you're not wrong in suggesting it at all.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not. It's an amazing play.
Yeah. The difference is Jim Edmonds, like Andruw Jones, phenomenal hitter, right?
434 home runs career.
Yeah, phenomenal hitter. Jim Edmonds, also a phenomenal hitter. I just feel like in my gut, I don't know if it's just my bias, my anti-Andrew Jones bias, or what. The difference is, like, I don't know, Jim Edmonds, like, he also cracked a lot of home runs, too. He hit 40 home runs once. He almost did it, or he hit it twice, actually. Almost did it.
I can see that you're just trying to find a reason to cut Andrew Jones. That's what you're doing right now.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. But it's just...
It's not all about the numbers. I get that he's a 10-time Gold Glover and a 5-time All-Star. And I get it's not all about the numbers. You just have to go with your gut sometimes.
Well, I feel like I try to do half and half because quite a bit of this is numbers-based, you know, as I'm looking over their spreadsheets. And there's not, like, a huge differentiator between him and Edmonds.
Yeah, I mean,
Edmonds was the better player. Like, I don't know. Jones feels like he was more consistent towards the front half of his career. He even cracked 51 home runs in 2005. I'm seeing 41. Like, they both had huge power at times. They both obviously played stellar defense. I just feel like, you know, when you kind of look at the whole image, Jim Edmonds finished his career with a 132 WRC plus. He had six consecutive years, almost seven, of having it above, you know, 145. Like, Jim Edmonds, like, it's nuts because he really hit a second wind at age 30. He
goes off consistency, Edmonds makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, I'm going with my heart.
Go with your heart. No, that's good. I just think that when you compare the two, I'm giving the nod to Jim Edmonds above Andrew Jones. And the more I talk myself into it, I guess the better I feel. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see there. Now, Duke Snyder, I feel like Duke Snyder, when we talk about Hall of Fame ball players, he gets overlooked.
He does
more than he deserves. And it's understandable when you consider the time and place that he played. So Duke Snyder was one of three Hall of Fame center fielders in New York City at the time he played. The reason nobody talks about him is because he wasn't Willie Mays or Mickey Mantle. Like, he's going up against two top, quite possibly top 10, you know, two very inner circle Hall of Famers.
And then Duke Snyder crossed the road. Yeah.
And it's just, he's not, like, can you imagine growing up in New York City and having
those three,
Mickey Mantle, Duke Snyder, not to mention, you know, Jackie Robinson. And
oh, Roy, my goodness. Like, how could they move the team out of there? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they did. There's some, like, 99-year-old Brooklyn fan out there
just angry with you right now. Yeah. Okay. I want my super buzz back.
Yeah. But, can you imagine still calling him that?
Make it happen.
I gotta say, though, like, so here's the differentiator is Duke Snyder wasn't a good, like, a great fielder like them. I mean, he was fine. He was solid.
I mean, it was a completely different. Oh, are you talking like Willie Mays? Or I guess at this point, doesn't matter with defense between those three guys. Yeah. He was still a solid fielder.
Well, he was a solid fielder. I just mean in the context, not even Willie Mays and Mickey. I mean in the context of Jim Edmonds and Andrew Jones, who were generational talents in center field. He wasn't on that level at all.
Yeah, it's tough to say because all the highlights that we have, they're very grainy. And of course, it's still highlights from back in the day. So it looks a little bit out of place compared to what
the 50s, right?
Like, yeah.
But he was a very good, he was a good fielder.
I like how we're like disparaging a Hall of Famer. Like, he was good. He was fine.
No, but that's the thing is, like, I feel like those two guys have more of an argument on the fielding side, where Duke Snyder, most of his argument is just based on
bats.
Slapping
the absolute
out of the
bat. Uh-huh.
Like, just hammering the baseball. Like, I'm looking at his just WRC plus totals. So he, 1952, he goes 135. Next year, 165, 170, 164, 156, 146, on and on and on. Like, incredible, like truly a phenomenal hitter. He hit you know, like 300 for more, honestly, more times than he didn't, it looks like.
So
about, you know, anyway,
so it sounds like all of this obviously say, you're cutting Jones. That's been decided.
You knew I was keeping Duke Snyder.
Yeah,
because I have to, and he was also one of those ball players where, like we said, there's stats, but there's also heart in this. He was one of my I had a book growing up that was about Duke Snyder, and that was like, I was a huge Duke Snyder fan, which is a really weird thing for an 11-year-old to be into, is a ball player that played.
And also, by the way, grade A baseball name. Duke Snyder.
Oh, that puts him over the top.
Absolutely.
One of the three, he dominates that. I think that name just needs to come back. Start calling kids Duke again.
Duke?
That's cool.
It's it is.
Name. Yeah, I got to go Duke Snyder, the guy who cracked 40 home runs in five straight seasons from 53 to 57.
407 career home runs as a center fielder as well.
That's just... he's just a monster. Like I can't get over that. I can't like that's kind of like that conversation we had during the PitchCon episode where we were talking about Edgar Martinez, where it's like, how much is a bat of that stature real, how much is that worth without and this is, you know, he has the benefit of he is still a very capable and very good fielder out there in the outfield. He's just not Jim Edmonds or Andrew Jones. And I think, so I'm building the statue of Duke Snyder.
I can't fault you there.
You knew it was coming when you made this list. And then I'm sorry, Atlanta. I got to give the nod to Jim Edmonds over Andrew Jones. I'm probably, you know, I don't know.
But the rental member is different. If you get peak Andrew Jones versus peak Jim Edmonds.
That's true. That's very, very true. I still think okay, let's look at Andrew Jones's peak season here just based off of so that's probably 2000 it's 2005 when he hit 51 home runs, hit 263 gosh. Had a 134 WRC plus, 51 home runs, that's incredible.
And golden gloves defense,
that is a very that's rarefied air. And especially like best fielder in the league.
I mean, man,
so let's look at Jim Edmonds' best year. I'm going Jim Edmonds. I just identified it. So his best year, 2004, actually. So they're doing this at the same time. Hit only 42 home runs, but he backed it up with a 301 average. And, you know, he slugged a lot better. And he was still providing that same impeccable defense out in center field. He just did it. You know, he had a total 8.3 WAR, where in, you know, his 51 home run season, Aaron Jones had 7.9. Okay, so pretty
man close. Yeah,
that is really cool. I feel like that would be an interesting, like, kind of like a, we could do an episode just based on these two guys.
Oh, easy.
I guess, like, I didn't realize how similar they were in a lot of ways, because And I think also part of it is I didn't realize how good of a hitter Jim Edmonds was, because I remember seeing veteran Jim Edmonds. And I remember, you know, on the World Series winning Cardinals team, when they were, at the tail end of his career, when he's almost pushing 40 and he's still solid, but.
And that's exactly why I chose these guys, because they were so similar. You really cannot go wrong, but it's just painful to have to cut someone.
I think that really, though, like I said earlier, the separator really is that Andrew Jones fell off a cliff when he turned 30, and Jim Edmonds aged like a fine wine.
Okay.
I think that's the differentiator. And the more I'm really good at just convincing myself.
Oh, I know. You're talking yourself into it. At this point, Andrew Jones' name is dirt to you.
Okay, let's not go that far. Anyway, so I final answer. I am building a statue of Duke Snyder. I'm renting Jim Edmonds because over the course of the season, like I can lose the 10 home runs from Andrew Jones, which is kind of a preposterous thing to say, in favor of better average, more consistency at the plate, because that's going to come in big in the postseason when you need somebody who's a little more consistent on the hitting side, at least hitting for average. And you still get that amazing, that transcendent defense. And I want to say probably Andrew Jones is probably edges him out a little bit on the defensive end. I'll give that maybe a little consolation to the Atlanta fans listening to this. I feel like Jim Edmonds, from the start to finish of his career, I feel like he's just a little more complete of a ball player. That kind of tastes wrong when I say it. It doesn't.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
I think I'm going to, I don't know if I'm going to sleep on this. I'm going to come back next episode and then we'll see if my answer is the same. Cause we're splitting hairs with these guys. And I get that's the whole point of this, is to, you know, put a pretzel in our heads and to get us to doubt our knowledge of baseball. And you consider it a success, Brandon. You've effectively broken my
that's all I can ask for.
my confidence in my baseball.
I figured if I just let you talk for a little bit, you'll end up just breaking yourself psychologically, and then I shall be the only host of Short Hops and Tall Tales.
Wow, that was...
It's all part of the plan, man.
That's a good prank. Not as good as driving me out to the desert and threatening to kill me with a couple of goons. But
yeah, go listen to the last episode, folks, for that reference.
Yeah.
But for me here, of course, I said I'm building that statue of Andrew Jones because I love defense more than anything else. Right. If I can have Jones and like Ozzie Smith in the same team together, everything about it. And I'm having a passing thought. Maybe I do rent a Jim Edmonds, for example, for like half a season for the playoff push, because he was impact bad, absolutely great fielder.
That would be a horrifying defense to hit into with Andrew Jones and Jim Edmonds, like in the outfield.
And then for fun, let's throw Ichiro on the right field.
You wouldn't even need a third fielder in the outfield. You just have those left center, right center. All right, you guys got it.
But in 1953, Duke Snider hit .336. OPS 1.046. You can't say no to that.
Damn right.
Yeah, so I'm going to rent me some Duke Snider. And sorry, Jim Edmonds. Love you, but I got to cut you.
You just want to say Duke Snyder's name.
Duke Snider.
That's perfectly acceptable. He reminds me of, now I'm thinking of Duke Silver from Parks and Rec.
Yep, that's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, that was a really balanced argument because I still hate my answer. So I feel like that's the mark of a good cut.
When you finish up the podcast and you're still second guessing yourself and thinking I don't deserve this right now. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see what the folks on Twitter. We should start making these into polls, I think.
That'd be good. Oh, that's a good idea. Let's do that.
That's a good idea. Yeah. We can do that for this one. So if you hated our answers, interact with us on Twitter.
Hated Noah's answer.
Hey, that's perfectly fair. I don't love my own answers anyway, and I never claim to be an expert on, I don't know. We run a podcast.
Wait a minute.
We got to have some credibility here. Reach out to us. Feel free to actually pose your own trios of players, and we'll break those down. Why have we not opened that up before? We'll do that. Please let us know what you think about our answers. Give us yours. Give us your reasoning. And then if you want, give us another trio of players to discuss. We'll do that on a future episode.
Yeah, and we'll get sad over it too.
And we will hate ourselves for that as well. So anyway, if you enjoyed what you heard tonight, please follow Short Hops and Tall Tales on Twitter at Short Hops PL. Feel free to harass us at that tag. Follow Brandon at BD Riddle and myself at Noah A. Scott 6. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave a review if you like. Please tell your friends, help us reach new audiences. Yeah. So for Brandon Riddle, I'm Noah Scott, and this has been the Short Hops and Tall Tales podcast. See you next time.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.